Welcome to The Debate. I want you to imagine, just for a second, standing in the greatest library ever constructed.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
So the shelves stretch out into infinity, right? And they're filled with every conceivable piece of art, literature, scientific analysis. But there is a catch. The books are writing themselves.
Oh, right. Like millions of new volumes just appearing every second?
Exactly. The problem isn't how to write a book anymore. The problem is deciding which book is actually worth reading.
And in that library, the librarians are essentially the printing presses themselves, constantly, you know, whispering in your ear, telling you exactly what you should value.
Yes, spot on. That is the crisis of generative abundance. Machines can now instantly produce way more options than humans could ever meaningfully use. So today, we're looking at a radical proposal to solve this exact crisis. It's a blueprint for a proposed 100-year institution. It's called Build Something.
Right. And it aims to systematically preserve this permanent, uneditable record of human judgment.
Correct. I defend Build Something as a vital, sovereign lifeboat for human agency that rightly separates, you know, machine predictions from declared human choices.
And I argue that the mechanism fundamentally conflates popularity with truth. And honestly, it risks acting as unpaid model evaluation labor, just sort of dressed up as profound philosophical insight.
Well, let's establish why this institution is so critically necessary right now. The core problem of our era, as we said, is generative abundance. Machines can write, they can draw, argue, create, all at near zero cost.
Yeah, the cost curve has just collapsed.
Completely. And because of this massive shift, production is no longer the scarce resource in our society. The scarce resource is human judgment. I mean, think about it. An AI can generate 10,000 architectural blueprints in a minute.
But a human still has to actually look at them and decide which building we want to live in.
Right. We are facing a paradigm shift where we must distinguish between a machine's prediction, which is, you know, merely a statistical estimate of what we might like, and a human choice, which is a time-stamped, committed fact.
I completely acknowledge the accuracy of that diagnosis. The generative abundance problem is just, it's spot on. But I deeply question the proposed solution here.
Well, Build Something proposes a daily mechanic to capture that human choice. Every single day, the institution asks three questions. What is funny? What is beautiful? What is true?
The big three.
The big three, exactly. Humans and machines both submit answers, and humans judge them blindly. By permanently recording these choices, and this includes the, you know, the 90 to 10 minority splits without ever rewriting history, it creates this priceless, uneditable 100-year archive of what humanity actually values.
Right.
And crucially, it keeps this record entirely free from the control of corporate AI labs.
I mean, the goal is noble, sure, but the core mechanic of aggregating blind votes is inherently flawed when you try to apply it beyond simple subjective preferences. I mean, the source material itself contains a glaring warning. It literally says popularity does not make a proposition true.
Well, no, of course not. But furthermore, the daily guessing mechanic, right, where users try to figure out if an artifact was made by a human or a machine, that is merely measuring provenance detection. It tests whether a human can spot an AI.
Right.
It doesn't measure actual quality. And it certainly doesn't establish institutional authority. I mean, despite its lofty 100-year rhetoric, the project seriously risks extracting free evaluation labor from its users. The leap from, you know, clicking on a funny joke to selecting complex solutions for the world is entirely unearned. Okay, I see why you think that's just a glorified guessing game. But let me give you a different perspective. Let's look at how the funny and beautiful modules actually operate. The daily experience relies entirely on blind judgment.
Okay.
You are presented with two jokes or, say, two photographs. You don't know if you're praising a human creator or a machine until after you've made your decision.
Right, it's hidden.
Exactly. Think of it like a blind taste test in the world of fine wine. By stripping away the bias of the AI label, the institution forces honest verdicts. It builds a reliable ledger of whether machines or humans are actually winning on any given day. Judgment comes before identity. That's what makes the verdict honest.
Okay, but I come at it from a different way. We have to challenge the validity of what is actually being measured in that taste test. The text makes an explicit distinction that we really can't ignore here. Deciding what you prefer is declared taste. Guessing who made it is provenance detection.
Sure.
The system fundamentally risks confusing the two.
How so? I mean, if I pick the joke that made me laugh, isn't that my declared taste?
Yes, but the interaction doesn't stop there. A machine might generate a perfectly structured joke that a human prefers, but the human might also correctly guess a machine wrote it because it feels slightly, I don't know, sterile. But my deeper concern isn't about what's funny. It's the third module.
True.
Ah, the truth module.
Yeah.
Handling truth through blind voting is incredibly perilous. Reality simply isn't voted into existence by a room full of people clicking buttons on an interface.
That's an interesting point, though. I would frame it quite differently. The text explicitly addresses this exact peril by separating how true is handled compared to funny or beautiful.
Okay, how?
Truth decisions are not treated as popularity contests. They must resolve against evidence and observation. When a question is posed about what is true, people predict what the room believes, yes, but their prediction gets scored against what actually happened in reality.
But the line between a belief and a fact gets very, very blurry in a digital interface. If millions of people vote on a proposition, the sheer weight of that collective resolution creates a sort of social reality, even if the text claims it's just a preserved belief.
But that is the beauty of the uneditable ledger. In cases where things cannot be objectively resolved by physical evidence, they are explicitly preserved in the archive as beliefs. They are never falsely stamped as facts. The institution clearly distinguishes a recorded prediction from an observed outcome.
Okay, but, and this is a big but, if we accept your premise that these blind taste tests and belief predictions actually work, and they create this reliable ledger of human judgment, we immediately run into a much darker question.
Which is?
Who owns that ledger? Because what you're describing sounds exactly like the training data AI labs pay millions of dollars for right now. Let's look at the underlying mechanics. The system records the options shown, the machine's predicted choice, the human's later choice, the room's base rate, and performance relative to the majority baseline.
Right, the data exhaust.
Exactly. It even calculates a proper probabilistic score, like a Breyer score for the machine's confidence calibration.
Okay, I think we need to break that down for a second.
Right, sorry. For our listeners who might not be data scientists, a Breyer score basically grades how accurately a machine predicts the future, or in this case, predicts human preference.
Right.
If a system is secretly calculating that, it's not just doing philosophy. It's actively fine-tuning an AI's ability to predict and manipulate human behavior. That specific list of metrics is exactly what an AI lab needs to evaluate its models. So what you're really saying is that build something might just be the world's most elaborate CAPTCHA test.
A CAPTCHA test?
Yeah. Instead of clicking stoplights to train self-driving cars, we're voting on jokes to train corporate AI, all while feeling like philosophers.
Okay, I have to admit, when I first read the section on what happens to all this data, specifically the system they call Vera, I was a bit confused too. It sounds a little sci-fi.
It really does.
Like, can a digital profile really function as a map of your mind without becoming a surveillance tool? But the text provides a very clear answer to your CAPTCHA analogy. And the answer lies in data sovereignty. As you make these blind choices day after day, Vera reflects your judgment back to you over time.
But it's still collecting it.
Yes, but it shows you how your sense of humor has shifted, where you stand alone against the room, which machine model actually thinks most like you. It's a record you could literally hand down to your children in 40 years. The text establishes a firm data sovereignty principle. Your judgment belongs to you. It is never secretly sold.
A map of my mind sounds poetic, sure. But the text also warns that this can't be surveillance stressed as a feature. Generating massive amounts of highly specific training data is incredibly valuable. Even if they don't sell it secretly, the platform fundamentally relies on users performing the exact labor that these labs desperately need. The platform is accumulating immense power and wealth through this daily ritual.
I'm just not convinced by that line of reasoning, because the economic structure of the institution explicitly prevents that kind of extraction.
How? There is an absolute firewall built into the system. Dollars run the institution. Credits carry the competition. The two never mix. You can't buy credits to gain an advantage in the record. And more importantly, there is the founder's covenant. the founder publicly caps the wealth they can extract at $100 million.
Right, 100 million. Any value created above what the institution needs to run gets circulated back through the system to the participants and creators. This structural choice proves it's an institution serving its members, not a corporate extraction machine.
Look, let's be realistic here. A cap of $100 million is still a massive financial extraction for the founder.
Well, it's a cap.
That is staggering wealth. Cap or not. Calling it a covenant doesn't change the fact that the founder is building a fortune on the back of free human judgment. The participants get a neat little profile called Vera to show their kids, while the founder gets up to $100 million and control over the canonical archive of human preference. The disparity in value exchange is enormous.
I think you're undervaluing the public utility of the archive itself, though. Remember the overarching context. Right now, every benchmark of what AI can do is published by the exact same labs that profit when those numbers go up.
That's true.
There is no independent record. Build something creates a neutral scoreboard. The value returned to the public is an honest, uneditable history of the exact period when machines learned to rival human capability. The founder cap exists precisely so that if the institution scales to global prominence, it doesn't become another trillion-dollar monopoly optimizing for engagement. It hits a ceiling, it stops extracting, and it starts sustaining.
That's a compelling argument, I'll give you that. But have you considered what happens when the institution tries to actually use this sustained audience? This brings us to what the text calls the escalation ladder, the whole 3-10-100 arc.
Yes, the progression of user participation.
Exactly. The idea is that users start with simple judgments. Three choices get you a receipt. 10 choices allow the system to make an inference about your patterns, which you can correct. 100 choices builds that longitudinal profile we talked about. The institution wants to use this repeated participation to transition from the easy version, you know, picking out a funny joke, to real-world consequences.
Right.
They want to move from declaring taste to prioritizing global problems and authorizing solutions. I find that leap deeply problematic.
Why? The escalation ladder is a psychological filtering mechanism. It's exactly what transforms this from a daily game into a legitimate institution. Think about the why and how here. You don't want bots or trolls making decisions about global problems.
No, obviously not.
Right. So when you require 100 consistent choices, you filter for deliberate engagement. You build a dedicated room of participants who have established a longitudinal record of thoughtful, blind judgment. The first rungs demonstrate the mechanism. The later rungs direct attention and effort. If the room prioritizes a problem and the machines generate candidate approaches, the humans can then judge which approach actually deserves effort. That's how human agency survives generative abundance. We stop trying to produce every answer and start taking responsibility for choosing the right one.
I'm sorry, but I just don't buy that. Let me tell you why. Voting on a problem does not magically solve it.
Well, no one is saying it's magic.
You cannot bridge the gap between preference and reality simply by recording the votes in an uneditable archive. If I vote that we need a new bridge in my town and a million people agree with me, the bridge doesn't spontaneously materialize.
Right, obviously.
The text itself exposes this vulnerability. It states clearly, quote, "Nothing has been built merely because people selected a solution," end quote. An interface collecting choices does not magically become an authoritative institution just because it records the outcome. A judgment platform only gains authority when decisions produce actual physical consequences. Otherwise, it's just a poll masquerading as governance.
I am so glad you brought up that specific quote, because the text completely acknowledges this gap. It doesn't promise that the machine magically goes to work and builds the bridge. It proposes a thin but honest version of consequence.
A thin version.
Yes. The room prioritizes a problem. Machines generate several candidate approaches. Humans judge which deserves effort. Then the institution records what was attempted and what actually happened. It distinguishes a recorded attempt from a verified outcome. It is the permanent, uneditable record of that consequence that transforms it. If an institution accurately tracks what humanity wanted to solve, what the machines proposed, and whether it actually worked, over the span of a century, that creates immense accountability. It forces the outcomes into the light.
But accountability requires power.
It requires the ability to sanction failure or reward success in the physical world. A ledger, no matter how permanent or uneditable, is passive. We have countless historical records of humanity identifying problems and failing to act on them.
But
my concern is that wrapping this all in the language of a 100-year institution gives participants a false sense of accomplishment. They might think they are solving the world's problems by logging in, looking at a few machine-generated proposals, and clicking a button. It's a simulation of civic duty. It channels legitimate human desire for impact into a contained digital ecosystem where the only real consequence is that the AI gets a better Brier score for predicting human behavior.
I see why you'd look at a passive record and think it lacks power, but let's think about the scientific method. A scientific journal is a completely passive record.
Okay.
It doesn't possess physical power. It doesn't force bridges to be built or diseases to be cured. What it does is establish a canonical record of evidence. It records the hypothesis, the experiment, and the outcome. Over time, that passive record becomes the foundation of all human advancement because it's trusted. Build Something is proposing the equivalent for human judgment.
That's a huge claim, though.
But think about it. In an era where machines can instantly generate a million fake consensus opinions, having a cryptographically secure, uneditable history of what real humans actually chose is a radical act of preservation. It's not a simulation of civic duty. It's the prerequisite for any future civic duty to exist at all.
Look, I agree that preserving human preference in an era of machine generation is a noble goal. However, we have to look closely at the institutional rules aggregating that evidence. Let's talk about the concept of alignment discussed in the brief. The platform runs a permanent record of what humans believe machines should be permitted to do alongside what the machines themselves answer.
Right.
The text says the disagreement between them is the most interesting thing in the room. But if the machines are generating the options we choose from, the machine still fundamentally determines the boundaries of the debate. If I give you 10 solutions to a problem and you get to vote on the best one, you feel empowered. But I am the one who decided those 10 solutions were the only options on the table.
But that's exactly why the text specifies that the members propose the questions. The founder starts the machine, but the room increasingly runs it. Questions compete against each other in simple head-to-head matchups. Whoever wins an edition earns the right to put the next question forward, and the room ratifies it.
I see.
The system is designed for self-governance. The complexity lives underneath, but the surface stays obvious. If the machine was just feeding us options, your critique would be entirely devastating, I admit. But the institution explicitly places the power of inquiry in the hands of the members. We ask the questions. The machines and the humans both attempt to answer them. We judge the results.
Even if members propose the questions, the transition from judging artifacts to selecting problems remains fragile. The text asks a very difficult question that we really need to highlight. What converts judgment into authority?
Right, it's a huge question. Authority usually requires a mandate, a jurisdictional boundary, and real stakes. If this platform is just a voluntary community of people who happen to enjoy blind taste tests and philosophical surveys, it lacks the mandate to speak for humanity. It might just capture the judgments of a highly specific demographic, like the people who have the time and inclination to log in every day and vote on what is beautiful. To call that the permanent archive of what humanity values might be overclaiming significantly.
I understand the concern about demographic capture. Absolutely. But the structure is actively designed to mitigate that by making participation incredibly accessible. The experience demonstrates how little effort is required to create a useful judgment. A participant can make 3 meaningful selections in less than a minute.
Sure, it's fast. Right. And they receive a participation receipt that explains what they chose, how quickly it happened, and how it entered the record. It doesn't lecture them, it just shows them the consequence of their choice. By keeping the barrier to entry extremely low and the daily ritual strictly bounded, so there's no infinite feed to consume your whole day, it invites a much broader slice of humanity to participate than a traditional academic or political institution ever could.
Accessibility doesn't automatically equal representation, though. Making it easy to click a button might just mean we get millions of shallow split-second reactions rather than deliberate, thoughtful choices. And if those split-second reactions are then enshrined in a 100-year archive as the definitive record of human judgment, we might be doing our descendants a huge disservice.
How so?
We might be handing them a map of our impulses rather than a map of our wisdom, especially if the machine predictions start to subtly influence our choices over time. I mean, if Vera tells me day after day that I prefer a certain type of aesthetic, I might subconsciously conform to the machine's model of me. We become predictable because the machine teaches us to be predictable.
That's a valid worry, though I would point out that Vera is explicitly designed to reflect your choices, not dictate them. The text emphasizes that Vera can show you where you stand alone against the room and where you turned out to be right when everyone else was wrong.
Right.
It celebrates the distinctive individual judgment. It doesn't force you toward the median. And regarding the depth of the choices, the escalation ladder ensures that people who reach the stage of prioritizing problems have already demonstrated sustained, consistent participation. The system filters for deliberate engagement without erecting artificial barriers of elitism.
I'm still highly skeptical that the system can perfectly isolate human choice from machine influence simply by masking the identities during the voting phase. We're talking about an ecosystem where the machines are constantly learning from the daily results. The model will optimize their outputs to appeal to the precise statistical preferences of the voting room.
Well, yes, that's what models do.
Right, so over time, the machines will generate jokes and images that are mathematically engineered to win the blind taste test. At that point, the humans aren't really making free choices. They're just responding to highly optimized stimuli. The institution becomes a closed loop of algorithmic manipulation dressed up as human sovereignty.
But that ignores the fundamental nature of the archive. Even if a machine learns to perfectly synthesize a joke that wins the daily module, the institution has succeeded in its primary goal. It has recorded exactly what the humans preferred on that day, and it has recorded the exact prompt, the machine model, and the performance baseline that produced it.
Okay, so it documents its own manipulation.
Handing you the controls. Build something, hands you the controls. It lets you inspect the exact mechanism of how the machine is learning to appeal to you.
Let's assume for a moment that the archive works perfectly and captures exactly what you describe. My final concern rests on the transition from the daily edition to the 100-year vision. The text outlines a scenario where this runs for a century, outliving everyone who starts it. But institutions survive through adaptability and physical presence. An internet platform, reliant on servers, active user bases, continuous funding, it's incredibly fragile.
That's true for any digital platform, yes.
And the text says, value created above what the institution needs is circulated through the system. But if the primary activity is just sorting machine-generated content, user fatigue is inevitable. The novelty of the blind taste test will wear off. When the day settles and the personalized newspaper front page arrives, people might just stop logging in.
That is precisely why there is no infinite feed. Yesterday creates the anticipation. Today creates the participation. Tomorrow is the reason to come back. Each day begins and ends. You finish today's edition and you leave.
It respects the user's time, which is the most sustainable growth model possible.
And the institutional design anticipates the need for survival. It degrades gracefully. Even on a day when no human shows up to create, the machines can still answer and the day can still be preserved. The framework remains intact.
A framework preserving machine answers to questions no human is asking is a graveyard, not an institution. For this to work, it must prove it can legitimately transition from a subjective polling game into an authoritative body. It must avoid the trap of confusing majority preference with truth, and it really must prove it's not just treating its participants as free evaluation labor for the AI industry. If it fails those tests, it's just another clever app that flared up and faded away.
As we conclude today's discussion, I want to summarize my position. Build something represents a necessary, critical evolution in our relationship with technology. By strictly separating machine estimation from committed human choice and protecting that data through an uneditable 100-year archive in the Vera recognition system, it offers a credible, sovereign way to preserve human agency. It directs our collective focus toward what actually matters.
And my position remains that while the generative abundance problem is absolutely real and urgent, the proposed mechanism has to overcome massive conceptual hurdles.
It must prove that clicking on preferences can translate into institutional authority. It must protect the definition of truth from the gravity of popularity, and it must justify the immense value it extracts in the form of model evaluation data.
I think we can both acknowledge a strong point of convergence here, though. We both entirely agree on the fundamental premise: human judgment is now the scarce resource in the world, and humanity desperately needs an independent, neutral scoreboard that is not controlled by the corporate labs building these systems.
Absolutely. The need for an independent record is undeniable. The debate is purely over whether this specific mechanism can bear the weight of that responsibility.
Exactly. The transition from choosing what is funny to solving collective problems is the ultimate test of any system. There's clearly much more to analyze in the design of Build Something as it moves from theory to reality. So think back to that infinite library we started with. The books are still writing themselves. The shelves are overflowing. The machines are perfectly happy to tell you which ones to read. The question is, are we willing to build an institution that lets us choose for ourselves and ensures that choice is never forgotten? We'll leave that for you to decide.